with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. A little breaking news that we'll wait to the end of the show, but an injustice has been rectified. Interesting timing with this return of an award. We've got some regional baseball today. I know for sure in two locations. I asked Arapahoe, they're tomorrow. Elk City's tomorrow. So I know for sure in two locations we got some baseball today in Class A and B regional tournaments. Also, the Great American Conference golf tournaments wrapped up. We can tell you how that worked for SWASU and also a young lady from Cordell. And then the Big 12 men's golf tournament will be wrapping today down at Whispering Pines in Trinity, Texas. OU Texas and OSU all in the final group. But the Sooners and the Pokes have a long way to go to be able to challenge the Horns. But a guy that's been right here on this show, we'll tell you how he's doing. Fantastic yesterday. We'll go a little golf there at the end. NFL draft talk. I saw the Adam Schefter. So don't look up Adam Schefter, Jared.
Okay.
He tweeted out last night what positions over the sample size was from the 2000 draft through the 2019 draft, right up to COVID. Okay. 20 years worth of first round picks. Which positions have been the most reliable? And by reliable, the what that means is a team takes a player in the first round and that player signs a second contract with that team.
Okay.
So that decides if it's a hit or a miss.
With the same team.
With the same team.
Not necessarily the longevity of that player with multiple teams.
No. Just with this, like, because it's considered you hit on a player.
Yeah.
If you drafted him in the first round and he signed another contract with you,
he got the bag.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So that's considered a hit, miss. So which positions have had the greatest hit percentage and which ones have had the greatest miss percentage? Which then leads me down to what are the Cowboys' options at number 24? And so you've got this in your mind, like when I ask you that question, you probably have, okay, they need this, they need that, they need, you know, whatever, what have you. Like these could be what they might take. Now, what would you say right now? And then, not literally right now, but before I give you the Schefter stuff, okay. I'm going to ask you, what would you say then? And then after hearing which positions actually hit, see if it changes your mind on what maybe the Cowboys need to do at number 24. NBA playoffs game 2 tonight in Oklahoma City, Thunder Pelicans. Did you hear a little Zion? All of a sudden, Zion maybe not out of the question that he could return.
Tonight?
Not tonight, but before the series is over. So does that mean the Thunder need to get her done? The faster you can beat them, the better, and that eliminates the Zion possibility. What can Oklahoma City, or can they do anything to clean up the rebounding? What adjustments do you think might be made by New Orleans and how the Thunder can handle it and who wins and why? Last night, we actually had some road teams finally win games.
We were both right.
Indiana and the Mavs. Are there two superstars that are hurting their teams by playing? We'll talk about that as well. So that's what we've got on the plate for today. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to kadsam.com or you can download the app. The app's got it all. It's got radio. It's got the Penny News. Brand new edition at the Penny News hit the website last night at midnight. So check out the deals through the app online, thepennynews.com. Of course, Big Elk and Paragon TV. Speaking of Big Elk TV, we will have updates throughout the day from the Class 4A Girls Regional Golf Tournament right here at Elk City Golf and Country Club. Our man Gabe Edney's going to have some video, has some results throughout the day. So check out kind of intermittently throughout the day on BigElkTV.com. You'll see some highlight video packages from that Class 4A Girls Regional Golf Tournament here at Elk City. So that's coming up today. And then, of course, starting tomorrow, Big Elk TV, we will have Class 4A Baseball Regional times 1:30 and 4 o'clock. Do you remember the order that the Elks play?
Purcell.
Purcell first and McLeod second. Is that right?
Yeah, they play the Purcell-McLeod
start at 11 o'clock. We won't have that one.
Well, no.
And then we'll have the Big Elks and the Dragons at 1:30, and the other game's supposed to start at 4. Now, as we saw last year, those game times are subject to the game before them.
Yeah.
So, once again, how we'll do this, the same way we did it last year. If we can tell the times are going to change, we will put a message out on Big Elk TV's Facebook page that says, hey, the 1:30 start time for the Big Elks and Purcell will not happen. And then, of course, instead of like, just, here's all we'll have to do. We'll just wait on them to tell the official game time.
Right.
We'll just say, hey, it's been pushed back. We'll update you when we know what the official game time will be. That's just the easiest way to do it.
And you'll know when we know.
Yeah, and as soon as the coaches get together, if it is delayed a little bit because of the game before, and as soon as they get together, decide how much warm-up time they need, when the official game time will be, we'll post that on the Big Elk TV Facebook page, and everybody will know at the same time. So that's the only way really we can do it. First off, we haven't been cleared to turn the camera on to watch the last two innings of the game before us through the OSSA.
Yeah,
we literally can't do that.
We will get in trouble.
That's right. So that's how we're going to have to do it. But once again, today we'll have video highlights of the Class 4A Girls Regional out at Elk City Golf and Country Club. Then tomorrow, baseball. How are you today, Jared?
I'm good. How are you?
Just wonderful.
You're in a good mood.
I tell you what, I woke up this morning. My wife and I walked a little bit. We've kind of been off the walking kick since we got back from the Masters.
I've been meaning to ask, did that pay off?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know how to done it if I wouldn't have been prepared.
Good.
So we kind of took a week off, or I took a week off. She's still running and stuff. So last night, got back out there last evening after we ate supper, and I don't know, probably went a quarter of a mile or so. And all of a sudden, I could tell I haven't been walking. It felt like my calf muscles were going to burst through the skin in the back of my legs. She goes, which way do you want to go? I said, we have to go home. My calves are burning. They feel like they're about to burst through the skin. And she was like, oh, okay. I said, it's just a warm-up. Maybe we can do it in the morning. So then I woke up this morning, and it was pouring down rain.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, wasn't able to get out there this morning. But, it looks like maybe the wind's going to be blowing a little bit for the girls out there at the golf tournament, but cool. Cloud cover at least for a while.
You know what you need on rainy days? My wife bought one of these, a walking pad. It's not a treadmill, but it's a walking pad. And she walks on that.
I just don't like it.
She comes home at noon and walks, and then she does it after work. So twice a day. I don't know how long. I mean, it measures how long. The distance, I guess.
I never liked the treadmill. I like to get out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, get out and check things. My favorite thing is before anybody is up, really. You know, if we're out there at 6:15, just go walk the golf course. It's so peaceful. That's really what I like to do. But we couldn't do it this morning.
Well, she likes to watch suits and walk.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
So.
All right, last night, so let's rehash what happened a little bit in the NBA playoffs before we get to the Thunder game. Finally, road teams win. I think it ended up being 12 in a row with Minnesota defeating Phoenix in the first game of the night. Thought the Grayson Allen ankle injury spelled doom for the Suns. I think it was 52-52 when he went out with the ankle, and then the Suns were outscored 53-35 without him. Once again, third quarter.
Do you think that'd be a thing? Grayson Allen was the reason they – because he wasn't there is why they lost?
Well, it makes sense, though, because they are so thin anyway.
Yeah, that's
that,
true.
You know, an injury like that, then that forces all those guys. It's just – man, it just doesn't seem like it works with those three guys. It just doesn't. It's like they need another facilitator to get them the basketball, and they just don't have that. But I will also say this. Minnesota was by far and away the best defensive team in the league this year.
Mm-hmm.
They have guys, obviously everybody knows about Gobert, the defensive player of the year, 4 years or what have you. You know, Towns is kind of suspect, but they're perimeter dudes with Jaden McDaniels. You know, Ant will guard you. What's his name? Alexander Walker. They have guys that really buy in defensively. And I think that's part of the reason why not only that, it just Phoenix looks so discombobulated at times where it really looks like it turns into a your turn, my turn with those three guys mm-hmm. on the floor at the same time. There, it just doesn't seem like there's any cohesion whatsoever with that Phoenix offense. But I give a lot of credit to Minnesota on the defensive end.
Yeah, you know, I think Rudy gets a lot of credit for that. Yeah, he's a master at defense, but I think those guys kind of feed off that. I think that's kind of what you're saying too. They see that and feed off of that. But Phoenix, it's not working. I know it's just 2-0, but you know, on the text line, Jeremy says about getting swept. I mean, it's very possible, which is crazy to think when we got a team with KD on it that they could be swept. But does this feel like it? Kind of does to me. You know, we knew the beginning of the super team era was Miami and LeBron and Dwayne and Wade and Bosh. But does this feel like this is the end of the super team era? Like this is the nail in the coffin? Like it's not working. It's a changing of the guard. We've talked about swings of different eras, and we've talked about over and over about the names and the stars. You know, the stars are getting older. And the new ones are coming into the league. Now even the way teams are being built, I think, will be reconsidered. Like Phoenix thought, we're going to do everything we can. We're going to put all our chips into the middle. We're going to get KD. We have nothing to back up on now. We're going all in, and it's not working. It's like a cautionary tale. It's like the rest league, I think, my opinion, are going to look at that and go, that's not how we do it. You can't do it like this anymore. It's just not how the league works anymore.
I don't think you can do – I think it can still happen. But I think I think the contracts have to be staggered. Like right now, you're talking about three dudes
yeah.
that are on, you know, toward yep. the end of their – but they're on as high as you can get, right? I think you need to be able to stagger a little bit like what OKC has kind of stumbled into here. Yes, Chet and J-Dub are going to get the max. But they're not going to get the SGA max, right? They get the rookie max. Mm-hmm. So you don't have all of your eggs tied up in that three-man basket. You know, if you have them, you have them, and I don't know what you do about that. But it's definitely showing, and, you know, I know Jim's been harping against what the Thunder are doing as far as playing as many guys as they've been playing. But to your point, I think that may be something that teams start to look at because what is Phoenix lacking? They have zero bench, especially without Grace. I mean, where are their guys? Well, their guys had to be shipped out in order to acquire Kevin Durant. And it does seem like it seems like everybody's trying to get two right now,
mm-hmm.
two guys. And then that allows them to not – since you don't have three, then that allows to supplement those two guys with people that fit around them. I think that might be the change that you're noticing or that we all start seeing is especially, you know, if it's older guys that command more money because of what they've done in the league – I don't think you can get three of them because once you get three, then they better be A, healthy, and B, fit completely perfectly together. Otherwise, you're not able to supplement them with guys behind them, not only in the starting lineup, but of course off the bench. And so, you know, and what does it take a lot of times to get those guys? It takes what you need to supplement, and that's draft picks.
Yeah.
you're not able to get better players on cheap contracts in the draft to help with that because you had to ship them out in order to gain the superstar. And so I think you might see that. I think it may still be kind of up in the air, depending on, let's say, what the Clippers do. The Clippers are obviously on that super team track with Harden and Kawhi and Paul George. But, you know, them, they're kind of, it's kind of a dying breed a little bit with the way teams are being built. There's no doubt about it. The other games, Indiana, I kind of alluded to thinking that they would have a chance with against a Giannis-less Milwaukee. Was Dame's, you know, outburst sustainable? Is there enough help outside of him? Once again, he killed it in the first half and did nothing in the second half. Ends up with 34 on 10 of 21, which looks like a nice night, 6 of 13 from 3. But Indiana, Pascal Siakam, a career-high 37 in the playoffs, 16 of 23. The game was played more at Indiana's pace, where they're scoring 30 in at least 30 in every quarter. And if that happens, I don't know that Milwaukee can hang with the firepower that Indiana possesses. I think last night's game may be more of what we see as opposed to the first in game one throughout this series. Because once again, I mean, Indiana, I think, ended up closed as a favorite to win the series without Giannis with the Bucks. I think last night you kind of saw why people thought that. And they were able to, you know, just not quite enough help for Dame.
Yeah, I like Dame, but we talk about you know, the teams that are how they're built, and that's how that is like a two-man prong there. And Milwaukee's clearly missing Giannis, but give Indiana credit. I don't know if, I mean, maybe if Giannis was there, that's a different story. But that's a big win for them, and shifts back to Indiana.
And then finally the last night, the last game of the night with Dallas and the Clippers. This game kind of back and forth. You know, there was times where it looked like the Clippers were going to run away and hide. Then all of a sudden Dallas would make a run. And, you know, Luka and Kyrie are really good. And I think, for me, I think that Kawhi did more harm than good last night because he's clearly not 100%. Clearly. The way he's moving. I mean, Luka locked him down on a couple of possessions, and that's not possible if Kawhi Leonard is healthy enough to be out there. And so I would almost submit to you that Kawhi being out there hurt the Clippers' chances last night of taking a 2-0 lead. A little bit like Philly with Embiid. That's when I bring up, are those two superstars that aren't at their total max capabilities actually hurting their teams? I don't know if that's happening with Embiid because they don't really have anything like him, and so everything you're getting from him is better than none. But in this situation, I felt like the Clippers, they're as good as they looked in game one, and the continuity that they had in game one really felt disjointed last night with the not only return of Kawhi, but not really Kawhi.
It's like he's taken a spot of a healthier player that can contribute, and that's weird to say because we're talking about Kawhi Leonard, but he's not 100% clearly, and who could fill in that role? I mean, maybe who started in his place? Was it Plumlee? Was it Westbrook? Who started in his place? I'm not sure, but I can see what you're saying. I mean, the Embiid thing is totally different because he's such a specimen. You need him out there, but Leonard, I don't mean this in a mean way, is replaceable if he's not healthy. And that does kind of put LA in a bad spot. Especially against a team like Dallas that has Luka and Kyrie, who are clearly healthy and really good when they're really good together. I mean, 55 combined points. How do you stop that? You know, you can't when you're hobbled like Kawhi is.
Yeah, Amir Coffey is who started in game one.
Okay.
And then, you know, last night played 12 minutes.
Which is smart because Westbrook's found a new career in coming off the bench. I don't think it's smart to start him.
Russ was terrible last night.
Yeah,
2 of 9.
He was not good.
9 rebounds, 3 assists, 7 points. He was a +8 while he was out there, but he didn't. You know, it just felt a little bit different with the Clippers, and they couldn't really kind of figure things out. And like I said, Kawhi, defensively, you didn't notice it as much just because Clippers are really good defense. offensively is where he just didn't have any explosion to get around Luka. I mean, come on, that is not a good sign for the health of that knee when he's not explosive enough to leave Luka behind. Because we all know Luka Doncic is not a good defender.
You know, we talked about yesterday, mentioned Harden and his always kind of lackluster performance in the playoffs. What'd you think about him?
And back to what Harden normally is. But I think you see this a lot of times outside of LeBron James with older players in the playoffs, especially once they start going every other night.
Mm-hmm.
You start to see, you know, their bodies don't recover. And so, you know, normally, you know, that extra day off really helps some of these older guys. I'm sure that Dallas made some adjustments to try to get the ball out of his hands a little bit more. You know, 6 of 14 doesn't look too bad, scoring 22, but 2 of 10 from 3 does. And, you know, that also, to me, tells a story of not being able to have enough juice to get around guys to get in the paint. He did shoot 9 free throws. But to settle, I would call it settle for 10 threes instead of getting into the mid-range or even to the rim, I think that tells you a little bit that Harden maybe not feeling quite as spry in game 2 as he was in game 1. And I think that's just something that you kind of see. That's why, yeah. You know, these older guys, you know, sometimes they just shoot the lights out and that happens. But you kind of start seeing inconsistencies out of these guys in playoff series from game to game once they get – north of 30 and even to the 35-year-old age range. That's just the way it goes. All right, tonight, Thunder and Pelicans game 2. How or can the Thunder clean up the defensive rebounding that was obviously a bugaboo and almost cost them game 1?
I mean, rebounding's so tricky. I mean, we've called a lot of games, and there's sometimes you just see a rebound happen. It's just a bounce of the ball. You know, sometimes the players are in good position and it just goes – those long bounces, those long rebounds. I think there's a sequence or two in game 1 that was kind of the case. But it's still the league. You got to get a hand on it or something. I don't know how – I mean, Giddey's got to do better. You mentioned that. He's got to do a lot better rebounding. It can't be all Chet. But even times Chet has fingers on it and he wasn't bringing it in. I'll equate that to being nervous, you know, adrenaline, whatever you want to – call it, but Chet needs help. Giddey needs to get more involved.
Yeah, I think Giddey is a huge part of this. I think we'll probably see more J-Dub for rebounding purposes,
mm-hmm.
To try to battle with Valanciunas. To me, the easiest way for this to work and for this to be is for Chet to make shots, because if he can knock down threes, that puts Valanciunas on the bench because Willie Green has to go with somebody else on the defensive end to combat what Chet can do. And so if he can knock down, you know, 3 or 4 threes, not necessarily right at the first, but throughout the first half, then that maybe that makes Willie Green change what he's doing from a rotational standpoint, and that gets Valanciunas off the floor because 20 rebounds in game 1, 9 of those on the offensive glass. Oklahoma City has nobody that can really challenge him from a physical standpoint. I mean, he's just like Paul Bunyan out there. That when you see him, he just looks like a totally different dude than anybody else out on the floor. And so I really think in a lot of ways, being for Chet offensively is the key to getting him off the floor, and then that immediately has to help with everything else as far as the rebounding goes. I agree 100% about Giddey. You know, he's not – reliable necessarily from a scoring standpoint, but at his size at 6'8", you know, maybe he's gonna have to not be as soft. You know, I think that's clear. He's more of a finesse type player. Mm-hmm. New Orleans isn't a finesse type team. They're as physical as anybody in the league, and so that's gonna have to be something he meets the challenge at. And he can't have 3 or 4 rebounds. He needs to be in that 8 to 10 range for the Thunder to maximize that whatever their ability is on the boards to combat what New Orleans does. But I think it's Giddey, B. But A, I think the easiest way is for Chet to make shots and prove to Willie Green that Valanciunas can't guard him.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
What do you think adjustments we might see out of New Orleans defensively?
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to think who they would they make any adjustments on SGA. I don't think there's any adjustments that could be made. He's still going to get his, you know, right around 25, maybe even, you know, pushing 30. I don't know. I mean, you mentioned the Valanciunas thing with him, you know, muscling on Holmgren, but if the shots start going in for Chet, then that takes him off the floor. So, I mean, you kind of already answered your question with how defensive changes could be made going smaller if the Thunder is able to hit their shots. And I wonder if they go that quicker to try to frustrate the Thunder from their mid-range and beyond.
You know, Herb Jones has obviously done a really good job against SGA throughout the season. And I'm sure that they trust him to kind of slow SGA down as much as whatever that means. But you have to wonder, what have we seen other teams do that have kind of frustrated not only the Thunder, but especially SGA? And that is like blitzing him as soon as he comes across the line to get the ball out of his hands. Then that, of course, forces somebody else to either make a play or somebody else to make a shot. I wonder if they kind of go to a little bit more of that instead of just Herb Jones trying to lock up SGA. And maybe not, you know, every other or every fifth possession throughout the game, but especially if this game is close in the last few minutes, instead of letting Shea, you know, pick his matchup like he did in that one, the and one possession by getting the switch to McCollum and then, of course, the and one in the lane, I wonder if they just say, you know what, I don't care who it is, but somebody else is beating us besides Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and forcing the ball out of his hands in those key possessions late, I think is something that if I'm Mark Daigneault and Shea, I'm probably preparing for tonight, where they're not just going to let you dribble it around the top of the key for 20 seconds and then get in the lane and score.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. That's what – if it was the other way around and you know, the Pelicans had somebody like Shea, that's what I'd be saying too. Don't let their best player beat you, especially down the stretch. And I think, unfortunately, in game one, Shea wasn't his normal efficient self, but down the stretch – when they really had to have a bucket, Shea was able to get it. And mm-hmm. I think that yeah. I don't think they're going to allow that, at least as much as they possibly can, to get that ball out of his hands. So then the playmaking of J-Dub becomes huge. The shot-making of a Dort or of a Wiggins or even Chet becomes paramount down the stretch of a close game tonight, if that transpires, because I think they're going to make somebody else beat them. And that. Yep. And that's what I would do too,
yep.
Without a doubt. Game two, 8:30, right here on the Sports Animal. 7 o'clock for the pregame show, and then of course 8:30 for game two's tip. Hanging out here on a Wednesday, Boomtown Grill. The Boomtown Grill. Yesterday, did you go get you a $5 chicken fry? That was the Tuesday special. Tomorrow, the Thursday special is those 50-cent boneless chicken wings. So today, it's just a normal day, happy hour from 2 to 6. That's Monday through Friday. We've got 12 big-screen TVs, appetizers, drink specials, 11 beers on tap, 30 bottles and cans available. What a perfect place to go down and enjoy thundering up at the Boomtown Grill tonight. Watch some NBA playoff action. Of course, tomorrow, you can sneak in there for the 50-cent boneless wings and the NFL draft. It's not just those specials. They've got pizzas. They've got pastas. They've got burgers and sandwiches. They've even got, I mean, you're talking about if you're a health nut, they got it for you. Salads, grilled chicken, maybe a steak salad. They got everything at the Boomtown Grill. 2103 South Main in Elk City. Open 7 days a week, 11 to 10, Sunday through Thursday, and then 11 to 11 on Friday and Saturday. Okay, Jared, so going into the break, I previewed the guessing game that we're going to play. Adam Schefter tweeted this out over the drafts from 2000 to 2019, so a 20-year span. Which positions have been the most reliable on hitting on a first-round draft pick? And what hit means is you draft a player in the first round, and that player signs a second contract with you. That is hit. Now,
yeah.
There's obviously different sample sizes to this because of the amount of players at a certain position,
right?
That would be taken, you know, in the draft. I mean, there's going to be less of this than that. But this is based on just pure percentage points only. So if I said, Jared, which position has the best percentage of hits in that 20-year span in the first round of the NFL draft, what would you say? And this is broken down by literally not just a group. I'm talking about position.
Right. I'm gonna really overanalyze this because the heart and soul of your team, your quarterback, I'm not going to say quarterback, but I will say when they're breaking down, when they're analyzing, trying to find the best fit for this position to keep guys like your quarterback healthy, keep them upright, make the pass, all the stuff, control the game, I'll say guard, left guard.
Okay, so guard and tackles.
I'm thinking blindside is right. Where I'm going.
Yeah, they didn't break it clear down to that.
Oh, okay.
So it's like guard and tackle.
Guard, tackle, yeah.
Yeah. Guards have a 50% hit rate. 28 were drafted in the first round. 14 hit, 14 miss. That is third overall.
Oh.
So
well,
that's a really good guess.
That's about par for me, third place.
Third place. Now, listen, there are 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, there's 12 positions.
Okay.
So, I mean, you're in the top fourth with that guess. Guard, 50%.
Because I think of someone, I mean, like I think, you know.
Oh, I forgot to ask you. Wait. Going into this, what do you think the Cowboys should do at 24? Before you know these answers.
Offensive line.
Okay. Well, you're not going to change your opinion, I can tell you that. So, there are three positions that have a better than 50% hit rate. Number one by leaps and bounds is centers.
I almost went there. I almost went
11 there. Of 12. There was only 12 drafted in that 20-year span. But 11 of them hit. One miss. So that's 92% hit rate for the center. You guess guard, which is third. The other over 50% is offensive tackle. So the offensive line was the only ones that had 50% or better hit rates. Offensive tackle, they were 38 out of 64, which is 59%.
See, I also was thinking offensive line. You know, I was thinking of guys like, Kelsey, who just retired from the Eagles. Lane Johnson's another one. Creed Humphrey over at Kansas City.
Yeah, but he wasn't a first rounder.
I know. Okay.
Yeah.
First rounder.
Yeah, it had to be first rounders.
My bad.
But still, you're right. I mean, just think about the Cowboys. That's why I kind of brought them up in this. Because think about some of the picks they've made that nobody liked at the time. They have taken four first-round offensive linemen. Tyron Smith, and they're on all levels of this. Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick, who's the center, Zach Martin, who's the guard, and then Tyler Smith from Tulsa, who's playing guard. Those all appear to be hits. Well, three of them already are. Hell, two of them might be Hall of Famers with Smith, with Tyron, and also Zach Martin. So at least the Cowboys' first-round draft have built this out exactly right. They've got hits on all three levels. Unless did Frederick ever sign a second contract because he got hurt? I can't remember. He might be the miss, but he wasn't a miss. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know. All right. So offensive line is the only ones over 50%. Now there's a group of four of these positions that were somewhere in the 40s.
Say that again. There's
four positions that are somewhere in the 40s, either from 40 to 49% hit rate.
Let's go to the other side, that defensive tackle or a defensive line.
Okay, it's separated out from tackle to edge rusher. Both are there. Both are at the bottom of it.
Okay.
Defensive tackle at 40%, 24 out of 60. Edge rushers at 44%, 46 of 104. There's two others. One of which is surprising to me.
I'll stay on defense and cornerback.
Nope.
No.
Linebacker.
Linebacker.
Linebacker is 48%, 24 out of 50. And then the other one, and this surprises me because, and I, you know, it's stacked toward the first of this century instead of now. And so I think probably if you do the next 20 years, I don't think this position will be as high as they are right now because of the lack of money you have to pay out of the draft. And that's quarterback. Think about up until Sam Bradford got drafted. Teams weren't near as willing to take flyers in the middle to late part of the first round on these quarterbacks because they had to pay them so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, yeah. Bradford was the last one that got that mega, mega contract as the number one overall pick. And so it probably – I think this number has gone down as these 20 years have gone on because teams are now willing to take more risks because you don't have to – blow up your cap for a guy you don't even know if he can play yet.
Right.
But quarterbacks are 46%. 26 out of 56. But like I said, I think that number will go down as teams, you know, 15 years ago, New England ain't drafting. I mean, I get that they had Brady, but New England ain't drafting Mac Jones on a flyer at 15. They're waiting until the second or third round to take that flyer. Now they don't care. Because it doesn't hamstring you by missing. Mm-hmm. Hell, Arizona took back-to-back first-round quarterbacks. Josh Rosen decided he wasn't the answer and then picked Kyler number one. You would have never saw that in the pre-Bradford era.
Right.
That would never happen. You probably wouldn't have taken Josh Rosen in the first round anyhow if you had any doubts on him. You'd wait. So quarterback's surprising, but I think that it'll get down to where we all would think it might be as it goes on. And then the ones that have been less than 40%, quarterback or corner, running back, safety, and then the last two, tight end and receiver. Wide receiver is the least hit position of first round draft picks in the NFL draft from 2000 to 2019. 21 out of 77, 27%. I wonder if that one will be the inverse of the quarterbacks. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, man, it feels like at least right now, and maybe it's just the bias of time in this space, but it's – of course, I say that, and Tyreek didn't do it. Of course, he wasn't a first-round pick. But, you know, Devontae Smith has already re-signed for a second deal. Everybody's waiting on CD. You know, are you going to see Jamar Chase and Jefferson and those? You know, it feels like those – maybe it's just that draft class or right through there. But it seems like that, you know, receiver is going to be one that kind of climbs the ladder because of the importance of them. Well, I thought it was really interesting that – you know, a lot of times when you start seeing the grades, like coming out on Friday, first round grades will be handed out by all the draft gurus and this and that. And inevitably, somebody that took an offensive lineman when they could have taken the, you know, the, what do you want to call it, the flashy pick, and instead they took a lineman, they'll get about a D plus. Then about 4 years from now, you'll go, boy, I mean, Cowboys is a perfect example. Everybody's up in arms. When they picked some guard out of Notre Dame named Zach Martin instead of Johnny Manziel. And my God, was that a great draft pick.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But the offensive linemen, the only position groups and all three pieces of the offensive line were the only ones above 50% hit rate. It's pretty incredible to actually see that on paper. That was an Adam Schefter tweet from last night. So – obviously, I'm going to go ahead and guess that if you thought offensive line going in for the Cowboys at 24, once you see that actual data, changes your mind zero.
I mean, it's a need, right?
I think it's a need, and I also think that if it goes the way a lot of these mock drafts are going, not only is it a need, but also you're going to have guys in that area where you're drafting that fill a need while also giving you great value, because they're a higher position on your draft board than what you're picking at.
Yeah, so it's a win-win, but it is a need. Now, who that could be, I don't know.
I was watching a deal last night, kind of in between games and this and that. The guy from Barton from Duke. Mm. So the Cowboys, they kind of need two things. They need a tackle, and they need a center. Guess what? He did them both. So maybe you can sort of kill two birds with one stone. Yeah,
figure out where to put him.
Yeah, which spot he's better at once you get him. That would be one. I think, you know, when you look down through it, Tyler Guyton from OU is going to be in that area. I think Amarius Mims from Georgia is going to be in that area. The other center, he's got two last names. I can't remember what his name. I think he'll be in that area of possibilities. Now, that seems like the smart play.
Jordan Morgan, is that you're thinking of?
No. It's something Johnson.
It's hyphenated thing?
Yes.
I'd have to find out.
Anyway. That would be the smart play. But is that what you want to do?
Well, on the other side of it, I mean, there's been a lot of talk that they need a third wide receiver. I get the feeling that Dallas thinks they already got their third wide receiver somewhere already on their roster. But there's a whole Dak situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they, and there's been a lot of talk. You know, Stephen A. Smith wants them to draft a quarterback because I think it's dumb. And he loves for them to make dumb decisions. But he thinks it's time to find the successor for Dak.
I don't necessarily disagree. Because
I don't trust anything that comes out of Stephen A.'s mouth when he talks about the Cowboys. He just wants them to burn.
Oh, I know.
So there's no serious reporting when it comes to him talking about the Cowboys. He just rips on them. So when he says that, I'm like, okay, whatever. That means they shouldn't do it.
If you knew you could get Michael Penix in the second round, I think you would draft offensive line. But is that even a possible replacement? I wouldn't hate it. Because here's the thing. I'm done with Dak. I'm done with him. And so eventually you're going to have to take his replacement. And when you look at what's coming next year in the draft, it's not as good as this. And if you plan on being pretty good, you're going to be kind of in the same spot with a less talented pool to pick from. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if they drafted Michael Penix. I would cuss the moon if they picked Bo Nix. If you're going to pick Bo Nix, just pick an offensive lineman and wait till about the fourth round and pick Spencer Rattler or somebody like that, or Michael Pratt from Tulane, one of those.
Any stock in the fact that Trey Lance is on this roster?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they even care. And the problem is you're not really ever going to get to see him because Dak's there, and their contracts are concurrent when they run out. That was the dumbest part about that trade, was they drafted a guy that could have been a jumping off point for a lot lesser price tag, except for they're at the same time.
And Cooper Rush is just too old at this point.
Yeah, Cooper Rush is Cooper. Whatever. I mean, he's not going to lead you.
He's a great backup quarterback.
He's not leading you to a Super Bowl championship. But, you know, that I'm sure the guy, nobody's wanting to turn loose of a guy that was young enough to make that make sense. But, yeah, if Trey Lance was in like two drafts later, it's a perfect trade. Because then you can let Dak play the season out. Don't pay him yet. See what happens. If you don't like him, then you've got a young choice for 2 years that's already been in your system for two. Now they've got a young guy that's never going to play, has been in the system for 2 years, and you got Dak who nobody wants to pay $60 million to. So they've kind of forced their hand into making this choice possibly tomorrow night. So we'll see. I don't think they're going to do it, by the way, but I wouldn't hate it. Because at least it gives you a let Dak leave, and you sort of have something there that might work.
Yep.
Okay, Jared. I think I finally found a couple of good things about the NIL.
You did you?
I think I found two things that are positives about the NIL.
Okay.
Paying players isn't one of them. Because it's clearly back to the Wild Wild West. It's like the Southwest Conference in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
With what's going on. It's not how it's not what it was designed to do, but it is what it is. But, number one, the return of the video game NCAA college football.
Mm. Yeah. That is coming back.
That's one. And then number two, apparently, has happened today, according to Pete Thamel. The Heisman Trophy Trust, or the Downtown Athletic Club anymore. A Heisman Trophy Trust is finally returning Reggie Bush's 2005 Heisman Trophy. Their statement basically said, with the changing landscape in college football, essentially why he got it taken away is legal now.
That's right.
So, Reggie Bush getting that Heisman Trophy back.
You agree with it?
100%. 100%. I thought it was ridiculous that he ever gotten taken away. And here's why. And I think the timing of this is really, really interesting. Because they took Reggie Bush's Heisman away because his parents got to have a $300,000 house. They didn't take O.J. Simpson's away when he killed two people.
Allegedly. Now, come on.
Yeah, O.J. I was gone when he died. Poor guy, never got to figure out who the killers were. You know, that was his quest as soon as he got out, was to go find who the killers were somewhere on a golf course in Florida.
I was really hoping the days after he passed away that we were going to hear that he confessed on his deathbed.
Yeah, he's way too narcissistic for that.
Yeah, I know.
But Reggie Bush, do you agree?
Now I do, because of the changing of the rules and everything. But I'm a guy, I'm a rule follower, so I approach everything like this. Are there rules and laws that I agree with? Absolutely not, but I follow them. And so I have a problem with people that are up in arms. Like, well, listen, he broke a rule that was in place that he knew about. Was it a good rule? No. But I since this has all changed, the landscape of college football has all changed, I agree that he should have got it back, and I'm glad he did.
So, yeah.
Because we all remember that season, man.
Well, absolutely.
One of the all-time greats, and he deserves to hold on to that Heisman.
And here's my thing. Yes, we know about what he did. How many of those Heisman winners do you think did the same thing he did or more?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Just he happened to
And he kind of – and it came upon a time where – help me with the year. Was it 05?
05 is when he won it.
You know, I mean, the internet was, I mean, people were getting more vocal on the internet with mm-hmm. Facebook or MySpace at the time or whatever it was. Everything was becoming more transparent, whether you liked it or not. And so it was becoming more in the light of all that, those transgressions or whatever,
sure.
The breaking of the rules then. But you're right. There was a ton of that. I mean, there's more egregious stuff happening with past Heisman winners. We all know that's true.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. I mean, as far as what he did. He wasn't the only Heisman winner that got paid some money
right.
to go play college
right.
football.
Right.
So, Reggie Bush Heisman back in his possession, apparently, according to Pete Thamel.
Now, I wonder how long before we see it in a Wendy's commercial.
Oh, think about all the cool ideas Wendy's can have now at the Heisman House. That's exactly right.
Oh, Heisman House.
They could have Wendy's so many fun things.
Yeah.
With all these.
By the way, those Wendy's commercials during the March Madness was awesome. I thought they were great. My kids loved them. They get it for a buck. Get it for a buck. Dave Single. Dave. You're welcome, Wendy's.
Shout out to have the app. Okay. Collegiate golf yesterday. The Great American Conference Championships wrapped up at Forest Ridge in Broken Arrow. The Swasu men ended up fifth place. I'm sorry. Swasu men ended up fourth place behind Henderson State, Harding, and Southern Arkansas. Sutton McMillan tied for fourth overall as an individual, shooting four over through the three rounds. He shot two under yesterday to vault up the board, only three shots behind the winner. And then the ladies, the Lady Dogs, finished third, a shot out of second. Henderson State beat everybody pretty good, and then Harding was second. It's at one shot ahead of Swass. Lady Bulldogs had two in the top six. Freya Sala was two shots back. She finished in a four-way tie for second, and then Cordell's Megan Brown, another shot back there, finishing in sixth. Meg was a GAC all-first teamer again, and she obviously proved her the reasoning for that there in that conference tournament. So both those teams, I think, headed to regionals, and we'll kind of follow that as we move along throughout the end of the collegiate golf season. Also, Big 12 Men's Championship, last round underway at Whispering Pines down at Trinity, Texas. Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, top three, the Horns. Just a couple of guys on each team have teed off this morning. Horns own a 10-shot lead over OU. The Sooners have cut one off of that, as they've both guys that have teed off for Oklahoma, Stephen Campbell and Luke Kluver, have both birdied the first hole. So OU's cut one shot off, but still down 10 to Texas. OSU is another three shots back of OU. Those three teams are in the final threesome playing at Whispering Pines. More importantly, as far as locally goes, true freshman Ryder Cowan, who's been a guest on this show before, he is tied for eighth currently, hadn't teed off yet, at 3 under par. Ryder shot one under the first round on Monday, backed that up with a 3 over par round in the afternoon. Then yesterday, bogey-free 5 under 67 to lead the Sooners way up the board. I think they moved up three or four spots yesterday as a team behind Ryder 67. So he'll have a chance to finish in the top five in the conference tournament. Let's see what the lead is. Lead is 8 under. It'd be hard to, you know, you need Ty Gingrich is the leader from Cincinnati individually. Probably need him to back up just a little, and if Ryder can fire another 5 under out there at him, you never know. Maybe he's the individual conference champ. But more importantly, I think see if OU or OSU, either one, can make a run at the Horns, as Texas is really their round yesterday was the best of the tournament at 13 under, and they went vaulting to the top of the leaderboard, and they've got a pretty substantial lead over OU and OSU.
Awesome.
It is awesome.
And Megan Brown is pretty cool.
Yeah, she's been really, really good. Just a tough day on Tuesday when it was real windy. Kind of put her, she had the lead after round one. A tough day on Tuesday put her behind the eight ball a little bit. But, yeah, she's been, she'll have a chance. The Lady Dogs have a chance to make it through the regional into the national tournament. And if they don't, she'll have a chance playing well enough as maybe an individual. You know, hopefully it's the team, but if it's not, then, you know, the way she's been playing this spring in her final season there at Southwestern, she's been really, really good. And obviously Ryder, cool stuff from a guy that has never, you know, all these are firsts for him as far as these different tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, and heading into the regionals and all that kind of stuff, and hopefully the nationals, and who knows from there for OU. But it'd be a tough task for either OU or OSU to reel in Texas today. They'll need some help. The Horns will need to play a bad round, you know, closer to even par or maybe even over par, in order for either OU or OSU to have any shot. It's just it's too tough a course to be able to just smoke it. But if you do play really well and the Horns struggle a little bit, they're all in the same group. They all know what everybody's doing, so that probably helps OU or OSU if they can really get going here in the, you know, by the time you make the turn, be able to tell if there's any chance or if it's just going to be kind of a cakewalk for Texas into the Big 12 title. But we'll be watching that for sure. There's also a little bit of baseball coming up on the high school ranks in the regionals. I know Leedy is at Kiowa. That's been moved up today for the first day. Kiowa, Covington, Douglas is at 11. Leedy and La Mega at 1:30. You know, then the winners will play, the losers will play. Then also Canute down in Caddo, right?
Yeah.
Caddo plays Bingeroni at 11. Canute plays Depew at 1:30. So both of those have been moved up. I know I talked to Rappo Butler there, staying put as far as the days. They've got a little bit of change for the baseball on Wednesday with game times moving earlier. And that's probably just to maybe get it over with and send, you know, people get to go home, you know, some of that stuff. But they've made adjustments to some times on Wednesday or on Friday, excuse me, but not as far as changing days completely. There's probably a bunch of that going on, honestly, all across the state. But we've got that today. And then, of course, the Elkettes regional golf tournament at Elk City Golf and Country Club going on right now. We'll have updates throughout the day on BigElkTV.com. See some video highlights, manage the scoreboard, and as the Elkettes try to make it into the state tournament that will be held, I think it's at Weatherford, next week. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have updates there on Big Elk TV for those state tournament, for the regional tournament on the golf. And then, of course, tomorrow, Big Elk Baseball right here at Ackley Park hosting regionals, have a 1:30 and a 4 o'clock game. Purcell and then McLeod. So we've got lots of stuff coming on the high school spring sports kind of finale to the seasons for the Elkettes, the Big Elks. You know, there's golf, there's baseball, there's tons of stuff rolling along. We'll have it all right here on the daily. Thunder prediction: win, lose,
win.
Easier than game one.
Yeah, I think they settled down tonight and they win it. And the spread 7.5. I think they cover it.
I can see it being a double-digit win for Oklahoma City. Here, right here, 8:30, 7 o'clock for the pregame. Everybody have a great Wednesday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!